recording. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Breaking Lessons podcast. We are in season 4. We did that at the same time. Holy shoot.
Oh, good.
So season 4, called Going for Broke. Abby, going for broke. Season 4, little play on words there. Abby, tell them what we're doing here, because you put it in the best way possible.
Well, this season is really all about quality.
Ooh.
And the items that we're spending our money on. What it means to have a high quality product, what you're paying for with that higher price tag, and why it's worth it. Why you should be investing in the products themselves, but also the people who make those items.
So let's meet one of those people that makes these items. We've got on the show today Mud Lowry, and let's just say, like, if you don't know who he is, you're probably not on Instagram, and you're missing out on some prime overall Chick-fil-A content.
Oh, my gosh. Amen. The content lately has just been
fire, to say the least. Fire.
Other people that follow me or listening are like, it's not prime. It's kind of...
They're like, we actually do. They're
like, business class. Economy. I'm the Spirit Airlines on Instagram.
That's how I'm
going
to describe myself from now on.
Spirit Airlines.
I'm the one to get away option from Southwest.
There are no check bags included in this.
And we are that of the podcast world. So without further ado, let's just let you introduce yourself. You know what? At this point, other than Spirit Airlines, you know, go for it.
I always hate this part because I'm like, oh, there's just so many like great qualities about me. Where to begin? I don't even know.
This is a timed podcast.
Okay, awesome. let me just hit the basics. So my name is Shannon Lowry. I'm from Florida. I grew up there. I went to the University of Florida. I grew up team roping, so I moved out to Fort Worth after I graduated college because I thought that I was going to be like Trevor Brazil's biggest competition, but some things happened. Basically, I just couldn't rope that good. So I was like, oh, I
several
should make jewelry.
Factors did not line up.
Maybe I should just make some jewelry. I don't know. So I kind of took a break from roping and sold my horses, and I work in the Western industry for a long time. I don't know if you're familiar with the store Lazy J Ranch, where I kind of I started there and created those hats and t-shirts you see everybody wear. They got into Cavenders, and about that time is when I started teaching myself how to make jewelry. And then from there, I went on to be the marketing manager at Justin Brands for Tony Lama Boots. Got to do a lot of cool stuff there. And then a couple years ago, I left there and went on to work for a company in the defense industry. And that's kind of allowed me to like kind of feel like I'm not competing, I guess, at work, you know, working in the Western industry for my employer and then also selling jewelry in the Western industry seemed like a conflict of interest, and I don't really have to worry about that anymore. And that's kind of helped me become less stressed out and kind of allowed me to become more creative. What else? My wife's name is Lauren. She's like the main model that you see in all my photos.
Oh.
And then, yeah, what a blessing.
She is a blessing.
She is a blessing. Thank you, God. And then, we got married in 2017, and a year later we had, real quick people. We had a baby, right before our 1 year wedding anniversary. If you do the math, we did not get pregnant before marriage.
I
want to make that very clear. My father, being raised Southern Baptist, I just want anyone listening, I would never do that. The baby came after marriage. Anyway, his name is Major. He's 3. I don't really know what else. I mean, just
how
I'm Native American. I'm Lumbee Indian. Something really exciting is our son's going to get enrolled in the tribe July 5th or 6th. So we get to go to North Carolina and do that at the tribe, which I'm really excited about. And I would say that's probably where a lot of my, like, influences come from in jewelry. My grandma my dad's mom, Grandma Sarah, she always bought turquoise jewelry for my cousins, and I always thought it was really cool looking, and I thought it was so cool that people did that for a living, that they made jewelry, then they would go set up at the homecomings and powwows up at the tribe and sell what they like worked all year on. I just thought that that was so cool. I never thought that I could make a career out of it, which is why I didn't start till I was older. But hey, look at me now. I'm on your podcast talking about my jewelry.
You've made it. You've really
That's
made
pretty
it.
Much. That's pretty much, that's all of me. There's literally nothing else I could say.
Wow.
I love all, there were so
I just learned
moments.
So much.
Yeah, Angela and I just looked at each other like, oh.
Wow.
What?
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm kind
yeah.
of surprised that you didn't have a person that you attributed to learning jewelry making from, but I think it's interesting that you took inspiration from, like, your culture and, like, how neat it was to see people doing this. Rather than like, oh, my grandpa, my grandmother, whoever, like, taught me how to, silversmith taught me how to pick out gemstones, that kind of thing.
I will say in this industry, in a lot of industries where you make stuff at your house, you're not corporate or anything like that, people are very, very protective about their crafts. And they're not, you know, they're not willing to teach other people, which is why, and I did notice that when I first started out, I would maybe ask questions or see other people asking questions and see the response they got. And I realized, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to be self-taught. I think now people realize there's money to be made in teaching. And mm-hmm. so they've stopped kind of protecting their art and they've realized there's a benefit in sharing their skill. And there's people that started out all along and they were already willing to teach people. I don't know if you're familiar with the Classy Trailers. It's just another jewelry company. My friend Jill owns it, and she, from the start, she when we became friends, she's always been willing to help. She teaches classes at the Art of the Cowgirl. She has a class that she's teaching right now. But there's not a lot of people like that are willing to help others because they enjoy it so much. And even me, I struggle with that too. I struggle with it because I'm worried about getting copied. And there is room here for everybody, but you do have to protect your stuff because. Not obviously people are not honest and you know that. So yeah, self-taught because I knew I probably would appreciate it later.
Yeah. So what was your workaround? How did you learn those skills that other people weren't willing to teach you?
Well, I don't want to bash people and say that they weren't willing to teach me. I just never asked. Cause I did know, I could tell, you know, even with leather working, a lot of people are not willing to teach. Where do they get their tools at? Where do they learn that type of stuff? And even in leatherworking, people get copied, so that's where that comes from. But the workaround, I mean, I wasted a ton of money. I would buy materials that didn't end up being what I needed. And it hasn't always been what it is now. I would only make, like, maybe a couple pieces a month. I've slowly gotten to the career that I'm in now, and it's really allowed me to focus on this on the weekends and when I'm off work at night. And so that's when it finally kind of started to turn into like a second source of income. I would say, yeah, the learning part was just, you don't know what to buy. You don't know what silver to buy. You don't know where to buy it from. Just things like that. But you really have to start making good connections with people you can trust, who you buy your materials from. And then, you know, I feel like you're pretty set after that.
Wow. So as you're learning these different things and what materials to use and kind of developing your own style, like when did you said like you started making one or two pieces a month, but when did you actually turn it into a business?
I mean, I would say probably a couple years ago. Probably like around the time we got married, which was like 2017. I remember being like, oh, I guess this is kind of turning into a business. The day of our wedding, I had to go ship out like five pieces of jewelry. And I was like, well, I'm a businessman.
Wedding ink on paper itself.
I would say back like 2017 is where I made it a point to make a couple designs a week or post jewelry or take custom orders. I would say in the past year and a half has when I've really started to take it seriously because I've seen like, I've gotten a lot more fulfillment out of it. Before it was like, you know, so many stressful things going on that this was kind of on the back burner. Now this is like, I'm just really, really, really enjoying it.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. So as your business is evolving, you have a really unique style, and there's definitely a specific voice that comes through, not just in the design of your pieces, but in the way you post about them and the way you market them. How has that evolved over time as you've learned more?
It's a good question. I think before I kind of just, you know, I shared my Instagram with, it was like a personal account, and I just randomly would post jewelry. And then as I started doing it and realizing, oh, we're kind of making money, I was like, I need to take this more seriously. So I started to do like backgrounds and, but none of it was cohesive. I would take a random photo in grass, and then I would take a random photo on a piece of cardboard. And, I was like, but you know what?
The jewelry's on the cardboard, or you're on the cardboard? Or is the Chick-fil-A on the cardboard?
I have ADD. You're messing me up. I think we were
all. It was
all
on the cardboard. Everything was cardboard.
It was a compost pile. Oh God, where was I? I should have taken Vyvanse before this. Cause I don't know where I'm at.
You took pictures in the grass. They were on cardboard.
Oh yeah.
And you were
so just kind of like, you know, I had my iPhone and I would just take photos. And but you know, the more that you're on social media, you see things that influence you, and it could be a Yeti, for example. They'll post a photo. I'm like, I really love how cohesive this is. I love what they're doing. And then more and more, it'll add up and giving me an idea. Hey, what do I want my brand to look like? And I will say, when I did finally like have the money to pay for a photographer, I remember my friend Bailey. She owns Bailey Sterling Photography, and I told her I wanted the photos to be like light and light colors and art. Light, like bright lighting, and then like vibrant colors. I didn't want it to be super moody. And then as I started to take it more serious, and I got my own camera, and I started to do a lot more color. I just really like colors, and so I try to make everything like really vibrant and kind of more cheerful, or like kind of just put you in a better mood. I like to be like scrolling through Instagram, and I'll see like that filter that everyone uses where it's like depressing. And I'll be like, it'll remind me that I am like, oh, I have so much
I used
to
be there.
Yeah, so I'm like, it puts me in like this brain like spot, or like this, what's it called, brain
like,
space.
Unlock the core memory where you're like, oh.
Yeah, and it just makes me feel like kind of down, not down, but not cheerful. I don't know how to explain it. Anyway, and I was like, if I'm going to look at my account, I want it to be cheerful. I want it to be exciting. And I don't know if I'm there yet, but I feel like I try to make my stuff like, happy, funny, whatever. I don't know.
So that's cool. That's really a reflection of who you are on the
exactly.
inside on that page.
I don't know if I go that far. Yeah.
Okay. This podcast should be over.
All right. Bye. So talking about these little details, even down to just experience. When you buy a piece of jewelry from Mud Lowry, when you go to Mud Lowry's Instagram, you are having an experience. What are people paying for versus like going to, I don't know, XYZ fake jewelry, fake turquoise, from
some real names if you want me to say.
That's a, yeah, we know them too. But what's the difference for maybe people that have never bought a real piece of jewelry before? Because there's plenty of people out there that, you know, it's out of their price range. They don't understand the value of it. What's the difference?
I mean, I actually really like this when people do ask, like, why is this so expensive? And I get to tell them what they're paying for is, so we have TXU Energy. We have Fort Worth Water Bill. I have a truck payment with Capital One. You guys are paying for all of that. My mortgage. I will say you're paying for, like, me being in my garage. I know I have a son, my wife. We like dedicate a certain time of each day or whatever to me making jewelry where I could be like out, and I am having fun. So I'm not saying I could be out having fun, but I'm taking this so seriously, like staying up sometimes till 2 o'clock in the morning because I just want this piece to be like so perfect. If there's like an imperfection, I'm sitting there standing on it till 2 o'clock in the morning, or taking a stone out and resetting it, or just coming up with a new idea, looking online for like a new supplier. Not only that, but you're buying – so sterling silver, and even after coronavirus, the price of it has gone up, like, so high. And if you see, like, a ring that I made back in, like, 2020, that certain ring, my price has not changed whatsoever. And even turquoise, like, price of turquoise changes, too. Like, let's say one supplier stops selling it. but I've already taken an order and I have to find a new supplier that has a certain turquoise that I have to have. They maybe triple the price. I'm not going to call you up and be like, hey, I know you already placed your order, but I need to triple your price because that type of thing. Like, so I do try, I try to like think like on that aspect. Like I try to use the highest quality stones. You're not going to get a ring in the mill and it'd be cracked. Or, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with turquoise, but there's natural turquoise and there's stabilized turquoise. And there's also turquoise that's stabilized and it looks like somebody just super glued a bunch of broken pieces of turquoise together. I don't use stuff like that. I try to spend, like, if I am going to spend money on turquoise, I'm not going to try to buy a ton of it at a cheap price. I'll try to buy as many stones as I can within my budget that are extremely well, like great quality. You could drop it on your floor and it would not crack. Not only that, but like, I don't make a ton of pieces, right? And so there's those companies out there where you see they are popping out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of the same design. And that's because they have a ton of artists working under them that they outsource to like different tribes or China or whatever. I can only make like a certain pieces a day and I put so much time into each piece, cutting it out perfectly, sanding it, polishing it, making sure it's set perfectly, putting my stamp on it. You know, like a lot of people, they'll call about a ring and they don't think about this, but they'll call me and they'll be like, hey, do you do repairs? I bought a ring and the shank is bent and, or the shank broke off. Like I put extra time and I'll add extra silver or I'll make the band thicker, things like that, that you don't realize you're paying for, but it's little details that I add to the quality of it that you're not going to have to call me 3 years from now and say, this broke. And I'm sure that has happened. You know, I sell cuffs and a cuff is like a huge thing, you know, because you don't know what size you're going to need. You crank it down on your wrist, and over time, sterling silver is not a metal that's made to be cranked down and opened up and cranked down and opened up. So my cuffs are one thing that I will say, like, I've probably had, like, three or four repairs, but my rings, I that's just one thing that I feel like I put a lot of time into is making sure that you're not going to have to call me and have it repaired. You're not going to take it to a repair shop. And I really hope that there's not people out there listening to this that have had to do that, and I just don't know about it. But I have a bunch of family members that have rings from when I got started, and they still wear them every single day, and they're in great shape. But that's also why, you know, people will be like, hey, I went to your website to buy your jewelry, and everything sold out. It's because I don't have very much stuff. I spend so much time trying to make the absolute perfect piece, and so that's why I can't make a ton of it. And that's also why you're not going to see a girl sitting next to you at a concert wearing the same ring as you, because each piece I make is so different. Anyway, I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I just love my work. I'm so talented. Such quality work. You're really not going to find anything like me. I don't know if you've been to Tiffany & Co., Neiman Marcus, nothing compares.
Nothing on you.
Not a thing.
And he's humble to boot. Wow. Wow.
You know, I'm talking like this, but I'm actually like super self-conscious.
Which is why this bell went off in your mind. Like, oh, shoot. I'm saying too many good things.
I will say, though, just to sum all that up, like, I will sit there and stare at a piece before I'm finished with it and think, like, what can I add to it? What can I do to this piece before it's too late to turn around? What can I add to it to make it even better, to make it stronger? I don't know, more durable, whatever. And sometimes I'll just throw it in the trash because I'm like, I know for a fact it will sell, but I don't want somebody to, like, have it because I don't like the way it turned out.
Okay, so release your address so we can come dig through your trash.
We're going to have a whole new breed of dumpster
diving. By trash,
diver.
I mean like a little pot where I built it and make it into something else.
Oh, never mind.
But I think that's so important because what people are also paying for is quality and for an heirloom piece that will not just last their lifetime, but lifetime beyond.
I didn't say that, though.
Originality.
Well, you'll be dead and gone by the time somebody's granddaughter.
Here's the thing. As long as my stuff doesn't start breaking before I pass away, I'm fine. If it all breaks the day after I pass away, I don't care. Like, I'm not going to be here to hear people
problem.
Say, yeah, it's nature's fault. I'm like, here, I want you to take over Mother Lowry.
Now, son.
It becomes like a straight-up repair business.
Since this is for all my dad.
Is yours to pay.
But it is this idea of something that's not just going to last you. Like, oh, I bought this ring for this Jason Aldean concert, and then after that, I may never wear it again, and I don't care because it costs $13.
For it's this trendy style that everyone is wearing this season, so here's something cute and fun. Like, these are investment pieces.
That's an interesting topic, too, of, like, talk to us a little bit about how much do you follow trends, or are you more in your own, like, you're trying to be the innovative first one to do something? Like, I'm thinking your sunglasses, for example.
Yeah, I would not say that, like, I sit here trying to be, like, oh, I don't want to be what's it called, fast fashion or whatever, or try to be trendy. And I'm sure I follow trends. I'm sure if something came out tomorrow, I realized everyone was obsessed with it, I'm sure I'd try to figure out a way I can copy it. I know for a fact I do that. For my sunglasses, a lot of people were not, nobody was doing it. So nobody was soldering their settings on the sunglass frames and sitting turquoise in them. I mean, I know you guys have seen like those plastic sunglasses that were like from like early 2000s where there was like turquoise glued to the sides, but nobody was doing what I'm doing now. So I worked with a sunglass manufacturer, got my own frames, polarized lenses. They're got my name on the tips of the whatever they're called, sunglass arms. And I feel like that was the first thing I made that I knew for a fact no one else had done it. I've made other things where like simple designs, and maybe somebody could say, oh, I've seen something similar like that, my grandma's whatever jewelry box, but nobody can say that they have seen something exactly like this. And so, I'm glad that I have this, but now we're just sitting by waiting to see when is, XYZ turquoise company going to make a pair. Which is fine, whatever. I mean, it's just part of all of it, but I'm very proud of them because, you know, I feel like very rarely have the ability to become super creative because there's not a lot of options of things that no one else has made. And so I'm proud of them and they sell really well. But you know, I can only make so many, they take forever to make but I'm glad people like them.
I'm curious, so have you had this happen to you before, that one of your designs gets co-opted by another company?
Yes, and but it was kind of a different situation. It was kind of like, so I had made something for somebody, and they started making jewelry and started selling the same thing. But it was a design that I really would never really make, so I didn't really care. But then it, like, became her, like, signature design. And I've done other things where, like, I'll do something super specific, and it'll be a company, like, one of the bigger companies, I'm sure you could guess, but they'll just mass produce it. But they do that to everybody. It's not just me. They're not like camping out on Mud Lowry trying to find what I make. They do it to everybody, which is extremely sad because it's like, it makes you think like, do you think that you're being innocent? Do you think that you're doing good by just making a ton of money off of all of our designs that we come up with? And it is what it is. It's hard. I don't know how you get around it. I guess you could send cease and desist letters, which I've had to do. And that kind of has worked, but we're never going to have the ability to make a design and not worry that it's going to get copied. I will say, like, when I made, like, those cuffs, so those cuffs that don't come together, it's called, like, a floating cuff. I started making those, like, maybe 5 years ago, I don't know. And whenever I started making them, there really wasn't a ton of turquoise jewelers on Instagram. And, I mean, people would come to me and, like, be like, this is the Mud Lowry cuff. Or they would go to another jeweler and be like, can you copy this Mud Lowry cuff? And then over time, you see everybody making them. I've made, like, a tiny, tiny version of it, and I was on Facebook or Instagram, and I saw somebody had made like the exact same ones, laid them out on a photo the same exact way. But it was like, it was kind of, and it was so funny how she like had them leaning on an antler just exactly like I had mine. And I just was like, I'm not going to start any drama. I'm not going to post it on my Instagram story, but I'm just going to simply message her and say, hey, you've messaged me before about my jewelry. I know you follow me. I know you see my photos. And just to see a photo that looks exactly like mine, laid out the same amount of pieces, everything on your account seems very suspicious. I hope you don't continue to do this to me. And, I haven't seen her do it yet. And it ended well. We're not friends. I don't want to hang out with her or anything, but I think she handled it well. And it's little things like that. There's a lot of jewelers that will try to become your friend or like message you and be like, where did you get this? Where'd you get that? And it's like, you want to tell them and you want to be nice, but at the same time, and you've been screwed over too many times that you're just like, ugh, I don't even know. I don't know if I should tell you.
That's so hard. Wow. There's such a fine line there.
Sometimes it's so obvious too. Sometimes they'll be like, this hasn't happened yet, but it'd be basically someone coming and be like, who is your sunglass manufacturer? Tell me who it is. What item number are you buying? And it's just like, I know exactly what you're doing, and I'm not going to tell you that.
Right.
There's
at
like
that point,
there's a level
like
that you have to protect
respect.
Your stuff. Yeah. And I do get like you do need to be helpful, and you need to help people that are trying to get up in the business if you have the ability to. But you don't got to tell them all your secrets. That's just part of it. You don't have to tell them.
Well, some of that almost feels like it comes back down to that piece of originality. If somebody wants to do that, they don't need to know your exact product number. They don't need to be remaking what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said for putting your own personal spin on something that you're making.
Or even Agreed. Knowing, I think it would be helpful to somebody that wanted to do something like that. I think it's interesting that you manufacture your own sunglasses for that, and it's not like you choose even down to the arms of the, I don't know all the technical terms, but you picked out every piece of these. That's enough for someone to know.
I will say, kind of to take you back to your original question where you had talked about what goes into it. I mean, the sunglasses, for example, let's say my sunglasses are like $290 or whatever. That does sound expensive, but the sunglasses are expensive on their own before I even put in turquoise, before I have to polish them down and recoat them and just everything that I have to do. I'm really not, if you think about it, you're really not making that much money off of it. And so, yes, it's an expensive price, but it's not a huge profit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also like, what is my time worth? I don't even know.
I think that's the question every artist or maker asks themselves ever. Like, am I worth this?
Yeah.
So I want to know, you said that it's almost to be expected that certain designs will be ripped off. Like, you're just waiting for somebody to pick up your sunglasses and start reproducing it on their own. But how does it feel when you see people buying that product instead of buying yours just because it has a cheaper price tag, essentially?
They don't really know. They don't get it. I mean, you have to think like that, you know, with that Facebook page that came out during coronavirus, I think it's like Cowboy Handmade Shop or something. And it was basically just a ton of artists that go on there, post their product, and people buy it. And it really blew up, and then people got to where they started screenshotting, like, a random company's purse, and they knew where it came from, they knew where they could have got it, but they would post it in that page and say, hey, do you guys know, is there anyone in this account that can make me this? Knowing that they could go to that store and buy it, they had it in stock, why didn't they just go to that person? And so, you know, they don't really care, but I will say, like, through that, there's been a ton of conversations and a lot of people commenting and saying, hey, we don't copy people's work. Don't screenshot another person's work and ask somebody else to copy it. We don't do that. And a lot of people that were kind of new to the industry and just didn't get it. It is kind of innocent. They just didn't get it. Are like, oh crap, I had no idea. I didn't even think that that's how it worked. And even my friends that have nothing to do with the industry back home, when I kind of tell them things like this, like, oh, I would have never thought about that. And so you do have to show them some sort of grace because they don't get it and they're new to it. But a lot of people are picking up on it. They'll tag me in a post and be like, hey, Shannon Lowry made this in the screenshot. And yeah, he's out of stock, but you can either wait or you can find something completely different. You should never go to somebody because they're sold out. You don't know, they don't need to be copied. And that's the way I look at it. If there's a knife case that I want, and the guy that makes them is sold out, I will never, even if he doesn't even make them anymore, I'm not going to go to, unless he gives me, like, I don't know, permission, which I wouldn't even ask, but I would never go to somebody else and ask him to make me that knife case because I'm too good to wait or because he's too busy to make me one. I guess because I'm a maker, I think like that, but I really feel like everyone should think like that. It's not like you're a hairdresser where, like, oh, I don't have enough openings. You know, go find a new, it's not like that. Anyway.
It's definitely an energy exchange, too, that you put so much into this product and somebody's picking up the whole thing, not just an end product, but the whole process, too, and all of the years that it took you to come up with the concept and get the talent and skills to create the product. Yeah, there's so much that goes into it that I think people are now becoming more aware of it because buyers are makers are more accessible through social media, but it's also making everybody feel like they could also be a maker.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's crafty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a difference between
money to be made too.
The
industry is huge. You got to think of the customers that we have in this industry, that, you know, a lot of them have a ton of money. And I will say there's room here for everybody. If you want to make jewelry, I'm here. Like, I know I'm cheering for you. Don't copy me though, because I will take you down.
hey everyone, did you hear that?
Especially
since I have two attorneys in my family now, I'm very, very confident.
Got a team.
I think that's another important piece for people to be thinking about is that this is also a very real legal issue. Like this is a money thing, and it comes down to a bottom line. Where people aren't just taking your designs, they're taking your livelihood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's selfish to, you know, if I've worked forever on this, I worked as a supplier for my sunglasses. I've spent so much time trying to figure out the perfect lenses and frames for you guys. And then someone comes around with more money, more, I guess, ability to mass produce what I'm doing. I can assure you I'm going to do everything I can possibly do to protect it because I'm so proud of it, and this is what I'm gonna use this money to pay for a major's college, things like that. And I'm not gonna allow just some random company that has zero integrity to come in and ruin what I got going. And I feel the same way for my friends. If they ever get copied, I always tell them, like, please let me know how I can help you. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people like that. I mean, you know, that whole, I'm not gonna name brands, but that whole situation that happened a couple months ago with that purse company that started copying a ton of independent artists and just got everything mass produced like in China, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with China, but to go and take someone's purse, they only have enough time to make one a week, and they go and get 60 of them ordered and they get them, you know, just popped out. It's not fair. And so I don't know if you guys saw, but there was hundreds and hundreds of accounts sticking up for these artists. And and so I do know that if anything ever did happen to where I needed the backup, and I got a little army waiting. Well, we all have each other's backs. We get it, and we understand.
Yeah.
You know, there is a couple bad apples, but in this industry, I feel like there's a ton of integrity where we all have each other's backs because we know you can just tell if someone's a if somebody's like a creative, like honest person, and they would never copy. We all kind of like stick together.
Mm. Integrity is a great word.
Yeah.
Great word.
It's hard to find. We're sold out. You know, it's kind of like toilet paper.
You're going to have to wait for that and your sunglasses.
Yeah. The truck comes in every morning at 6 a.m.
So for these, other than the few bad apples, I believe that there's also a lot of even the boutiques out there that they truly just probably don't have the time to sit on Instagram all day and see what these designers are doing. So,
yeah, and that was their excuse. Like, so the brand, the companies that were supporting that brand that was copying everybody, that's what they said. They were like, we don't know. We had no idea. And you may be about to get to this, and sorry for cutting you off, but like
you're good.
If I don't say it, then I'm going to forget. They just had no idea. And so this was like 3 weeks before market started. And so everyone had planned to go see this brand at market, but because we blasted this company, I'm sure a fraction of those people that had planned to go see them did not go see them. A lot of the people put their stuff on sale to get it out of their store because they didn't want to support them anymore. And I get it. If you have those purses in your store, what are you going to do, throw them in the trash? You can't do that. You already paid for it. And so, but a lot of people were trying to get rid of that overhead that they had, and they said they're canceling their orders with them. And so that's exciting to see that you have these companies behind you too that carry these products, and they're like, we are no longer supporting this company. And that's how you know that, like, it doesn't matter what you could do in court. It doesn't matter what letter you could send, cease and desist you could send. You have a huge army of friends that we'll all be like, what do you need from me? I'll screenshot it and I will post it right now.
Wow. And that money talks.
Yeah, and there were stores that were doing it too. There were stores that were screenshotting and saying, we are so sorry if you own this purse. If you bought this purse from us, this is the backstory, whatever. And anyway.
Wow, I love that because that loops back to that sense of integrity.
It shows you that people are... Exactly. It shows you that, to me, this is what I got out of it, just looking at the retail partners that stuck up for artists. It shows you that a lot of them care more about how they treat people than they do care about their money. And that's an exciting thing to see, especially crap, where we're at in the world right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
And I'm going to stop fucking over you guys.
No, you're good.
You're good.
I think the Western industry has... in some ways, been known for cancel culture. And so it's nice to hear the narrative slowly turning where in these situations, people can own up to their mistakes. And then as a community, we can come together to rectify that and figure out how we do better.
Yeah, exactly. I will say, like, the retailers that were supporting this company, and they really didn't have a, and I don't think this is what you're saying, but they didn't really have a mistake to own up to. But that company that copied everybody, they never owned up to it. They never apologized. They had people like sending them letters and stuff. They just continued to promote themselves being at market. And they were like, all right, we'll be here with these designs. And they kept posting copy designs.
Buddy.
But y'all, I'll message you after this. You got to go look at their Instagram. It's kind of it's funny.
Oh,
they're a bunch of clowns, anyways.
Taking a big old deep dive into that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I grew up in church, but I was like, they.
I got some word for this one.
Yeah. Yes. Let the Lord handle this one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm lucky. I have the company that I work for that I get to. And I love the job that I have, my other job. And if anything ever happened with this jewelry, I always have this to fall back on. And I don't even fall back on it, but it's a main source of income. A lot of people do not have that. And so, yeah, I do want my friends to stick up for me, but I don't need it as much as these people that this is the only source of income, and they do need us to stick up for them because this is how they pay their bills. This is the money they use to go to the grocery store. And not everyone's as fortunate as me and some of my friends where, if we get copied, we still have a direct deposit from another company.
Yeah, that's definitely important. But I think just like integrity in general, that it's still out there and it's just a choice that we consciously make as an industry that we don't do this anymore. We don't do that. And it's nice to see, you know, the makers on Instagram and get to know people as people and know where your money's going. And that's directly to pay people's truck payments and, you know, maybe give them a weekend away sometime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Shannon, tell us where we can find you online. Tell the people where they can go out and buy some rad sunglasses and rings that will never, ever break.
Or even just brighten up their news a little bit.
Possibly guaranteed by the Breaking Western podcast.
I will say, if my jewelry breaks, like,
and if not, Major will fix it. About 50 years.
Shannon AD. I will say, like, I don't even know. What did you ask me? Oh, so you can buy my jewelry on my website, mudlowry.com. Everything's Mud Lowry, so it's Mud Lowry on Instagram, Facebook, my website. If you're looking in the new issue of Billboard magazine, Mud Lowry's there too.
Ooh.
It's just Mud Lowry. It's pretty easy to find, but it's not easy to find product because my stuff sells out. Okra. Okra.
He's amazing at what he does, and he's very good at
it. I'm joking.
And there's no one better, not even Tiffany.
Quote me.
At me, bro.
All right, Mud. Well, Shannon, I just called you Mud because that just feels like a really
good name.
Hold on,
where did the Mud come from?
I was going to ask.
Did I miss something? Where did the Mud come from?
It kind of started in college. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but it kind of started in college, and then whenever At some point I changed my Instagram to that, and then I just kept it as a business name because that's what people saw. But when I worked at Lazy J, the owner that opened the stores, he said, he denies it now, which I don't even care if he hears this, but he'll be like, oh, he's like, what's your name? And I was like, Shannon. He's like, but your Instagram and Facebook say Mud. And I was like, I know, it's just a joke. He's like, well, I'm going to call you Mud because my ex-wife's name is Shannon. And I was like, oh, I'm glad you guys don't have HR because I don't think that's right, but whatever. And after I stopped working there, they were like, I don't know where we were at in public, but somebody was like, where'd you get the name Mud from? I was like, oh, funny story. Brad said that he wouldn't call me by my name because his ex-wife's name was Shannon.
Brad?
He's like, I didn't say that. I never said that. I'm like, okay. I'm like, whatever.
I will never forget.
That was like the hot goss in our text back and forth for a minute. Abby's like, could you know Mud's name is Shannon? Like,
yes,
it was always.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Is it a girl?
Right. I mean, and maybe that's recent that you're just more on your page. Now there would be no denying in my mind who you are. But before, I feel like you were a little more ambiguous. Maybe that's just me. But
so the whole thing about me being more on my page, I don't know where this crap's come from because this really isn't me. Like, I know I just bragged about my jewelry and that's all a joke. But I really am, like, self-conscious. I'll be like, oh, my gosh. And I've got super social anxiety. Like, whenever I went to the NFR, people would be like, I have your jewelry. I was like, oh, I'm so appreciative, but I'm literally sweating to death right now.
Thank you
for
letting this interaction be over now.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, please, yeah, just please don't. And then whenever the NFR came to Texas, I had so many more people that they would just like stop me because it was all outside in the stockyards. I'm like, hey, are you Mud? And I'd be like, am I a celebrity? Like, why are they just to me? No, all playing aside, but people would come up to me and be like, I have your jewelry. I love your jewelry. Your wife is so pretty. Whatever. And they'd try to talk. And I would literally be like, I need to be on medicine because I'm literally about to pass out. I'm feeling so awkward right now. So just so you know, all this is a joke. And all the stuff that I've been doing, like, for, like, I don't know, as a joke, it was a joke, but now I'm getting attention, and I love attention, and so I can't stop.
Don't say hi to me, but also I really kind of like it when you do.
Yeah. I don't ever, like, these videos, I don't really do where people can see me. So, like, no one knows I'm actually taking these videos, and then I'll post it. But if anyone ever wanted me to do something like this in public, I'd have to go to the hospital. I'd probably have a heart attack. My heart rate.
Never stop with the content, because it's life-giving.
Now I'm looking forward to our live stream.
Can't wait.
I don't know if I can do that.
We'll let you work up to it.
Okay.
Well, so then last question, will you be at NFR this year? Are you planning on doing that?
Not with a booth or anything. It would just be way too hard for me to, like, save up that much product. But I'll probably go and just go to a couple rounds and hang out with my fans. No,
what's happened in the street?
Well, consider us on Mud Watch.
y'all were here, and I... When you guys were here, I wanted to hang out with y'all so bad, but y'all were everywhere. I was like, what are these girls taking? Why are they not sleeping?
A great question.
You'd be shocked the hours we sleep.
Yeah, I was like, and I wanted to see you guys.
There's a lot of energy drinks.
Well, that one day, I think we actually just missed each other by maybe a matter of minutes at that coffee shop, and that was so strange.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Could you imagine? Well, we wouldn't have even known it was you.
Well, that's true. Well, now we'll be on Mud Watch.
And now we can.
You Mud Watch. Let's see. Let's turn that into a hashtag. You guys are so...
Yes. Oh, it already is written down. And it's going to be people's jewelries, too. So, like, when we see your pieces, Mud Watch.
Mud Watch. I cannot stand you guys.
That's the quote. That's the quote for the episode.
Mud Watch. Okay. I'll play a stride. If I go to Vegas, we'll all have to hang out or whatever. You'll have to come to my meet and greet because I'm sure I'll have one.
We'll bring the Xanax.
You know how Fallon Taylor kind of like that.
And we'll set it up on the sidewalk. Yeah. We'll put a tablecloth on it and a sign that says Mud Watch, and we'll just bring
it's like
you in.
The entry,
approach lightly,
like the
speak softly.
The
nervous boy.
Don't shake his hands because it's
no flash photography.
Oh my gosh. You guys need to.
Oh my god. All right.
Okay. Well,
all right. We're done
perfect.
Patronizing you for now.
So, if the people want to find you, it's mudlowry.com. It's at mudlowry on Instagram
and Facebook, and
mudlowry on Facebook,
all the things.
On Google, in real life.
In real life, hashtag mudwatch.
Hashtag mudwatch. Hashtag blood.
Hashtag blood.
All right, well, Shannon, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
This was a blast.
Beyond all expectations.
Yes. Yes.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure.
You guys are more humble than I thought he was.
Yeah. Wow. He's like a down to earth guy.
Like, I'll never forget where I came from.
I wonder what the poor people are doing right now.
Wait, I never said that. I am poor. I'm overdrafted right now.
Aren't we all? Aren't we all?
The bank is like, are y'all going to pay us back? Like, I don't know. We're going on vacation.
We're out of town that week.
I'll let you go.
They're like, we charge you $34 for every overdraft fee. I'm like, that's fine. I have a jewelry update coming this weekend. I'll pay y'all back.
Just front me a little bit. Thanks, y'all.
If y'all are ever in Fort Worth, I'll take y'all to dinner. Okay, Chase Bank?
And we're going to have to leave really fast and don't make eye contact with anyone.
Mud watch. Door by the bathroom.
Some bathroom by the window.
I want to get to the point where, like, now I'm being honest with you. I'm not even joking. This is how famous I want to be. I want to get to the point where I don't go through security at the airport.
Oh, yeah. That would be that's a goal. That can't be far off for you.
So I don't know who it was, but whenever I landed in Nashville a couple weeks ago, this guy that was sitting in first class, I was not there. I know I give off first class vibes, but I was not in first class. This guy got off at that, you know, little side that, like, you go off the plane, there's that little spot where they keep, like, the baby carriers and all that stuff, and, like, the strollers and wheelchairs. And there's, like, that door that the workers come up. Well, there's, like, a black SUV just sitting there waiting for him, and he just walked down there and left. I was like,
wow.
Oh, that's, I feel like I'm 2 years away from that.
I would say less than that. Maybe
I would say
months.
Less than 2 years.
You're going to fly out to Vegas, and we'll rent a black Suburban.
No,
like, oh no, we have a podcast.
I really hope that nobody listens to this. God, I hope nobody listens to this podcast.
This turns into like carpool karaoke. That's our new podcast format. We just pick people up.
We just drive our guests around from, like, venue to venue at Vegas, and we play games with them. You know what? You heard it here first. Gold.
This is what we're doing. Oh, my God.
Crap.
All right.
I'm done.
Because
I keep on seeing more and more traffic getting me in trouble.
I'm out. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Breaking Western Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Breaking Western Podcast. Make sure you follow Mud Lowry at Mud Lowry. But his name is Shannon.
You guys can
find
them. I
tried.
It's ridiculous.
Find me
at four seasons now.
Season 4, going for broke.
Going for broke.
Wow, this seems appropriate to wrap up and say that we're all going for broke.
We are all broke.
Except for me. I am going out the side exit. Into the black excursion. You guys are going into the Kia Soul. Oh, I really hope y'all don't have a Kia Soul. Do y'all have one?
No,
I drive a Subaru.
Oh, God, I feel horrible if I y'all did.
No.
Okay.
It would be fitting if we did. Now I'm going to go buy one.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening to another episode of the Breaking Western Podcast, Season 4. We didn't quite harmonize. Going for broke. We'll see y'all next week.
Next week.